right. Good afternoon, everyone. I will call our meeting to order on this November 17th at 2 p.m. Just going through the agenda, the first item is approval of the minutes. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
I so move, Doug.
I'll second that. Great. It's been moved and seconded. Any feedback, edits, questions on the minutes? All right. Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes, say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, Doug.
The motion carries. Moving on to our next item on the agenda, approval of the loans. There are two loans on the docket. Is there a motion to approve the loans?
So moved, Doug.
I will second that. Rich, do you want to walk us through the two loans that we're looking at today?
Sure. There's nothing unusual here. One of the loans is for road work, and the other one is where the village of Bloomfield is financing the cost to create their tax incremental district. Most of these are professional fees that they're paying to get this district off the ground.
Okay. Any questions from the commissioners about these loans?
Not about the loans, but just in general, do we assume the dearth of loans is because of the coronavirus?
I don't think so, Doug, although that may have some impact. I think this time of year we're generally going to see a decline in the number of loans that that are being requested.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions about the loans or the program? Okay. See none. All those in favor of approving the loans, say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, Doug.
The loans are approved. Moving along this agenda, there's no old business, there's no new business, so we'll just move into routine business. And we'll start off with the Chief Investment Officer's report. So, Rich.
Thank you, Sarah. You know, as board members of the BCTL, I would like to ask you to take action that will significantly benefit the school trust fund. As we discussed in our October meeting, the asset diversification established in the investment policy is having a positive impact on both the total amount and the resilience of the annual distributions that we make for public school libraries. You know, we have worked hard to fully implement the allocations and currently have only two asset classes outside of the target range approved by the board. These two asset classes are private real estate and cash. We selected private real estate investments because of their superior risk-return characteristics when compared to publicly traded REITs. Our investment committee has researched and selected the best real estate funds available for the Common School Fund. We hired and paid for third-party due diligence reports and approved three separate commitments totaling $90 million for these private real estate funds. These investments will bring the Common School Fund within the approved target ranges for all asset classes. Once complete, this $90 million in investments is expected to increase distributions by about $4.5 million each and every year, increasing the total annual distribution by more than 10% from current levels. That increase would be a significant jump for any fund. Another way to look at this potential is that delays in getting this done incur an opportunity cost to the beneficiaries of more than $75,000 per week. The only remaining impediment to completing these investments is a need to hire outside legal counsel with expertise in securities law to review and advise BCPL staff regarding the subscription agreements, the final step in the process. The estimated total cost of these reviews is less than $10,000 per agreement. The speed in obtaining this authority to hire outside legal counsel has an impact beyond the weekly opportunity cost to beneficiaries. One of the approved funds has offered a fee reduction of $30,000 per year if we lock up our investment for a period of 2 years. However, because of a rule change at the index of which this fund is a member, that fee arrangement will no longer be available starting in 2021. In summary, you know, I'm asking for your assistance in quickly obtaining the authority we need to hire outside legal counsel to assist in the documentation necessary to implement our investment policy. Tom and Jim, would you like to add anything? Well, so much for a subtle report there. it would be great to have that assistance, and I know we've asked in the past, and the answer came back from the governor's office, no, but it would be greatly appreciated.
Okay, and this is Jim, and I want to echo Rich's concerns here. You know, I can look at this in two ways. I think that a lot of times we are not that much different than a pension fund, where our beneficiaries, the public school libraries, are looking for some consistency. And we've done part of that with the smoothing fund. I think the mix of a variety of assets here is kind of extra protection against the weather, depending on what things happen. And the private investments obviously pay a lot more than the public ones do, just because they're intended for long-term investors. You know, I go back to my last 10 or 15 years here with institutional mutual funds, and a lot of times I might be in an institutional mutual fund, and even though I'm a long-term investor, the 1,000 people next to me are not. And so the mutual fund manager a lot of times has to be concerned about liquidity and other problems and things, and sometimes the obligations aren't there. So there is a little bit more of a comfort, I think, with some of these private investments when doing the diligence. And again, like I said, I'm on the other side of the table now. I used to be an issuer of municipal securities. I used to supervise, you know, stockbrokers, call centers, communications, that sort of thing. Now that I'm on this side of the table as a purchaser of these, I have a little problem with the comfort here. I don't know what I don't know sometimes. And so I, again, suggest that we find a solution here. With some additional legal help would certainly be a benefit to all of us here at the staff and also U.S. commissioners.
So, I guess Rich and Tom, I think what might be helpful is to just walk through the process that we've gone to date. So I think the first step was we talked to the Department of Justice, realized that they don't have the capability with regards to the legal review that we are looking for. Then we went to the governor's office. I mean, can we maybe walk through those steps that have been taken over the last year and a half to get us to where we are today?
Well, Sarah, you just recounted it. we had talked to Justice. At that point, it went to the governor's office, and the governor's office just said no. So what we have done up to this point in time is we have hired a financial advisor who in turn hired a law firm to do the initial review of the agreements and of the documentation. And at that point, I have had to step away from my duties as executive secretary and function as the lawyer for the agency in plowing through those documents. Now, most of those are 100 pages long, and if you can imagine how much time that takes out of my schedule, it's huge. I at an earlier point in my career, I did securities law work, but it's not something that that I do every day. And because each of these funds has their own way of asking those questions, you can't just cut and paste from one subscription agreement to the next. You have to go through step by step by step by step. And frankly, our fund is not the kind of fund that these investment pools are used to. Most of the questions are not geared toward a permanent sovereign fund like we are. They are geared toward pension funds, and they are geared toward toward private investors. And so, yeah, we're kind of a square peg in a round hole. And so as you're going through the subscription agreements, oftentimes it's a challenge to figure out exactly, okay, how do we fit into this universe of questions? So,
How was the request made to the governor's office? Was it orally, or did somebody send them something in writing?
If I recall correctly, I had made the request to DOJ, and DOJ had relayed it to the governor's office before.
was there a written explanation as to why that was being sought as part of that?
This is Doug, by the way. Which governor are we talking about?
It's the current governor. Josh, I don't remember the exact way that the request was framed. If you would prefer, we'd be more than happy to write up a more elaborate request explaining more the particulars of the situation.
I don't think it needs to be elaborate necessarily. I mean, I think a one-page summary of, here's what we're requesting and here's why, to the appropriate person in the governor's office, I assume his counsel, Brian Nielsen, would seem to be like an appropriate course of action.
Should the request be directed to DOJ first, or should it go directly to the governor's office with a copy to you?
Well, ultimately, formally speaking, it's a request for special counsel, correct?
Yeah.
But in that case, I think it can go directly to the governor's office. It's not an area where DOJ has specialized expertise, and so sending it directly over there would seem to make sense.
Yeah, I agree.
Josh, just a point of information about that process. In requesting special counsel or outside counsel, is there a way in which that outside counsel can be funded by the BCPL instead of the special counsel fund? How does the financing of that work?
I don't know the answer to that offhand. Does anybody from BCPL?
What I know, Josh, is that there's a separate appropriation for special counsel. But my understanding is that the governor's office can make, in essence, special agreements with the agency requesting it. In essence, that we would have a memorandum of understanding that we would be able to use part of our goods and services appropriation line to reimburse the governor's office. However, that appropriation line, I don't believe, gets replenished by BCPL repaying the governor's office. There is whatever that appropriation line is, if we pay the governor's office back, it doesn't replenish that line. So.
I just think that's a point that might be worthwhile at some point communicating is how that works. Because I do think that there is an advantage in articulating that the BCPL is willing to pay for those legal funds and or whatever that legal operation is, replenish it. So it's not necessarily taking away the current fund as it stands.
This is Doug. I have a question. If we are going to end up paying the governor's office, maybe I missed it, but why can't we just hire an attorney directly ourselves?
My understanding, Mr. Secretary, is that for us to hire special counsel, we need the permission of the governor's office. And there is a special appropriation for special counsel.
Oh, I see. So if we hired an expert attorney to advise us, it would have to be special counsel. It couldn't just be an LTE kind of a hire temporarily. I suppose we don't have that position in our budget, so we can't hire someone, I guess. Yeah, okay.
Well, you raise an interesting question. If there was a securities lawyer out there who would be willing to come on board as an LPE, the answer is yes, we could do that. Those folks tend to be a little bit rare, and I don't know of any of them that would be currently available as an LPE. I don't know any of the big firms willing to loan out a securities lawyer as an employee of the state for a limited period of time. The rate that we could pay them would be significantly less than what the firms would be charging for that service.
Well, then how would the governor's office find someone?
No, we need the permission of the governor's office, not that we would be using their counsel. We need their permission. And there is a special appropriation in the state budget for special counsel.
Tom, do you know if that appropriation is some sufficient appropriation or if it's some certain?
I thought it was some certain, but I will certainly verify that. That I don't recall.
I mean, because the reason I ask is if it's some certain, you know, they may have a concern that if they authorize it, it will use up their limited appropriation.
Right.
And prevent them from hiring counsel, in which case we may need to request legislation. Right?
Correct.
And Josh, that's my understanding, which is why I made the comment that I think that this could be workable if there is a way in which we can reimburse it, at least in the short term.
Is there a way to reimburse the appropriation, though? Or?
Right. I think that's the question. That's my question.
Generally, appropriations are not reimbursable. In essence, what your appropriation is what the total you can spend on it, whether you recoup those expenses from somebody else or not, that doesn't change your appropriation. The appropriation is what it is. But us agreeing to pay for that, in essence, keeps the state's expenses in line. And may provide the Gov's office with money for goods and services that they may use for other projects. So.
I mean, if that's a some certain appropriation, I think it's worth asking, but I also think it's worth assessing whether there's a legislative path. Also, the other thing I was going to ask is there someone at DOA who we could ask to support that effort?
I had talked to DOA's general counsel on the first go-around, and she had indicated that the answer to that was no. So.
And, Josh, I can chime in. I check in biweekly with the DOA leadership team, and they had to seek advice from the governor's office. They said that they were unable to do it.
I would include that in whatever letter we send to the governor's office, then, so it's clear that there's no other option within state government.
So has there
been any effort to attempt to pursue legislation on this?
There has been no effort to pursue legislation.
I mean, I think that is an interesting question, and I guess that's what I was going to say is I think a next step is what are some legislative options to consider? Is it inserting something in the budget process? Is it a standalone piece of legislation? What exactly does that look like?
So the next steps, as I'm understanding them, is that we will prepare a letter to the Gov's office. We will verify whether or not the appropriation for special counsel is a sum certain or a sum sufficient. And in the letter to the Gov's office, we would also include a statement that DOA is not currently able to provide those services, and we will verify that once again with DOA.
Yeah,
I think that's
vis-a-vis
the... Go ahead, Sarah, sorry.
No, I was just going to say that sounds right to me, and I think based on that response from the governor's office, being prepared to come up with what are the legislative options to getting this legal support that is needed in the future? I guess my question is, do we want to wait for the governor's office before that, or do we want to start pursuing what these legislative options are? Because if one of them is the budget process, we need to start on that today.
Well, because the first place to start this whole thing on verifying whether it's some sufficient or some certain is not just review the current budget, but also to have a discussion with our budget analyst. At the same time that I'm having that discussion with the budget analyst, it'd be appropriate to raise the question of is it possible to have a special counsel provision written into the budget bill? I am not aware of another agency ever having that, but that's not saying it can't be done. So.
Well, and as you say, Tom, we're far from the average agency.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are.
Okay. So, Josh, I guess anything else from your lens as Attorney General that we need to be thinking about?
No, I don't think so.
So, what I have done is, and we can maybe include this under our next agenda, is just a status update on this, but, moving forward, Tom, as you talked about with your letter to the governor's office, and then getting an update then on these potential legislative options as we move forward.
Yes. Yes. So at the next meeting, I will be giving an update.
This is Doug. I may have missed this in the explanation a few minutes ago, but why did this come up now and never before in the last 100 years?
In the last 100 years, for the most part, we weren't engaged in the type of investing activities that we have been recently.
Okay.
It wasn't.
Okay.
Yeah.
I understand. Thank you.
And for the first couple of the investments in these private real estate funds, I stepped away from my duties as executive secretary and plowed into serving as the special counsel to the agency to get through those agreements. So.
And I guess I want to take a step back. Doug, we did bring this up, and that's why the path that Tom mentioned earlier was really where we had continued to work on it. So we did submit that letter to DOJ. We did talk to DOA, and then it stopped at the governor's office. So I think what Rich is looking for is we don't want to lose sight of this, and we need to continue to move it forward since it's a critical piece to our ability to achieve these investments. Rich, was there anything else in your report or follow-up with that that you wanted us to think through?
No. Thanks for your consideration on this.
No, thanks for bringing it back up to the forefront so we can work through this. It's important. Okay. Moving to Tom's report.
Nothing as exciting as Rich's report, I'll say that much. At the last board meeting, I reported we had accepted a winning field bid on one of our isolated and unproductive properties that was approved at the October 6th board meeting. So we're now moving to closing, so I'll need to obtain the signatures of the commissioners on that land patent. I thank you in advance for making yourselves available to sign the patent, and I can personally notarize your signatures. Josh, I'm assuming that I would contact your do I go to Ashley, or do I go to the DOJ secretary's office to schedule that?
Either way.
Either way? Okay. Earlier, I reported that the phone line that we've used for our board meetings for years will not be available after the first of the year, as that conference line program is going away. So to make sure that we have migrated properly ahead of time, we'd like to use the new phone conference line for the next board meeting. TWE will be setting up the meeting schedule to obtain the password and meeting ID, which we will provide to all of you ahead of time. The new phone number will be the same for future board meetings, but the password may change for rescheduled or special board meetings. If any of you are taking notes, the new phone number is 608-571-2209. But like I said, we will be providing all that to you ahead of time.
And including it on the agenda, Tom, like usual?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Great.
We only have a three-person board. We need everybody there. We have contracted to work with Stephanie Marquis on the Wisconsin impact report that the board requested. I'm excited to work with Stephanie as she brings a wealth of experience in both state government and media to this project. I'm meeting with her tomorrow, and we're shooting to have a template put together by the end of the calendar year. We are evaluating several parcels of land for acquisition in northern Wisconsin. A large landowner up there is considering divesting itself of thousands of acres, and there are a few larger parcels that would work well in our land portfolio. We currently have approximately $2 million in funds available for land purchases in the land bank, and this may be a good opportunity. And finally, we're looking to start up the new year off at the January board meeting with a recap of the calendar year 2020. As a result, we expect the first board meeting in January to run longer than usual, and we respectfully request you reserve enough time in your respective schedules to accommodate that. And that's all I have for today.
Any questions for Tom? So actually, Tom, you very nicely teed up what my chair's report was going to be. And I just wanted to share with the commissioners and get their feedback on exactly what we planned on covering for that year-end review for the January 5th meeting, because we've talked about it intermittently throughout the last few months, and I want to make sure we're all on the same page with what we would cover and kind of expectations. So one piece that we've continued to mention is just a year-end review with the investment portfolio. So since we've approved the IPS, highlighting some major investments, the impact on the fund, and also the work of the state trust fund loan program. So that was kind of one piece we talked about that we would discuss at this meeting. The second piece that we discussed is looking at the goals and priorities. So the ones that we agreed to at the beginning of 2020, and then looking at our progress and performance towards those goals, but also as we look forward to 2021, how might those priorities and goals change, knowing that this is a living document, but I think it's important as commissioners, we're all on the same page with that direction and where that's going. And that too fits in very nicely with what Tom mentioned with that Wisconsin impact report, since that's something that we've talked about and is listed on the, on as a priority for the next few years. And then I think the third piece that would be helpful, is Tom sharing and kind of the commissioners having a conversation, since Tom has now been the executive director for a year. And so getting his thoughts, feedback, and checking in now that he has served in that position for us for the last 12 months. So those are kind of the three big items I was hoping we could cover at this year-end review, and wanted to hear Doug and Josh from your end if there's anything that we are missing or any questions you have about that agenda.
I'm okay.
I think that sounds good too.
Great. Great. Okay. That's it from my end. Any future agenda items? All right. See none. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved, Doug.
I second.
Great. Josh seconds it. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor of adjournment say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, me.
Aye, Josh.
Thanks, Doug. Great, Josh. Thanks, everybody, and enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. Bye-bye.
Thanks.